Hello, Zimbabwe. Welcome to Live Talk. We are coming to you live from Studio 7 at the Voice of America in Washington. And I am your host, Evans Zininga. Today on Live Talk, we are discussing the International Migration Day being observed today across the world. Some Zimbabweans living in diaspora have started investing home as they prepare to return home for retirement, while some invest to secure assets to raise funds. Columbus Mavunga has this report from Harare.
Gift Chawasarira is a Zimbabwean who for the past 24 years lives and works in South Africa's financial sector. He says he wants to expand his business ventures in Zimbabwe.
I came here to develop my country. I had fears, but those fears have been negated through the policies that the government has put in place, like the Victoria Stock Exchange where we are listing. That protects my money.
The Victoria Falls Stock Exchange, or VFX, was established in 2020 and is popular for trading in the US dollars, unlike the country's exchange, the Zimbabwe Stock Exchange, which allows trading even in volatile local currency, the ZIG. Bekthemba Nkomo runs Diaspora Capital, an investment company working with Zimbabweans who live abroad who want to invest in their home country.
We are finding that the need for Zimbabwe to have a home back in Zimbabwe is probably the number one need that is there.
That's not all they want, says Nkomo. Zimbabweans of the diaspora are looking for safe investments.
We've seen value erosion 3-4 times in our generation. And we have found a way that answers that question to say, what is it that I can invest in that's not going to lose value? And it's the same old thing that our great-great-grandfathers did many, many years ago, and it is investing in cattle. We have found a way for people to invest in cattle on a short-term basis, on a medium to long-term basis, and that way we are able to preserve value, we are able to grow value. And even if there's currency changes, even if there's devaluation, the value of the cattle stays the same.
Marlon Gwadu is an economist and a senior associate at Mark and Associates based in Harare. He says Zimbabwe now offers huge investments to both local and diasporians in mining, tourism and agriculture.
There's a need for us to really have a structured investment products for diasporans. For example, the Diaspora Infrastructure Development Bond, which is tailor-made for foreign investors at the VFX in a way that protects their investment. I think it's a medium to long-term low-hanging fruit needs to be harvested on, amongst many other opportunities for diasporans.
In some townships of Harare, houses for Zimbabweans in the diaspora are springing up and many hope to get returns through rentals. Others plan to eventually stay in their houses when they retire and return home. Officials we reached refused to comment on diaspora investments. However, when presenting the 2025 national budget, Finance Minister Muthuli Ncube said Zimbabweans living abroad sent $1.9 billion in remittances in the first 9 months of this year. He says remittances are now expected to get to $2.49 billion by the end of 2024 and $2.51 billion in 2025. Columbus Mavunga, VOA News, Harare, Zimbabwe.
Some nuggets there of what's happening in Harare, Zimbabwe. Let's go to our Africa Mis and Disinformation series now. Cameroonians will head to the polls next year to elect a president for another 7-year term. Previous elections in the Central African nation were marred by misinformation that fueled chaos on social media platforms. Now, journalists and media professionals say they are taking preemptive measures to prevent a repeat of these issues. Njozeka Danatu reports from Cameroon.
Ambo Vanessa Lizzie, a social media content creator in Buya, was browsing through social media when news popped up that falsely reported that Cameroon's 91-year-old president, Paul Biya, had died. Vanessa Lizzie suspected the news to be fake, but the president was out of the country and the government didn't release a statement denying the rumor until after a month following official visit to China. But the news had already gone viral.
Inasmuch as we want change, I will not wish anybody dead.
The rumor, it turns out, was started by an anti-separatist group working to establish an autonomous English-speaking region in Cameroon. Batata Boris Kalof, station manager of CBS Buya in southwest Cameroon, vows to fight similar rumors and provide accurate reporting, especially as the 2025 election approaches. He says he spent over 5 years fact-checking reports. Jude Mbaku, the editor-in-chief of DMR-TV Buya, is a leading fact-checker in the region. He's tracked separatist group using social media to mislead the public, even on personal matters involving the Cameroonian National Football Club.
When the Lions went to Côte d'Ivoire for the African Nations Cup there, the Indomitable Lions were there, rumor peddlers had it that Jack Clinton had resigned from the squad. And those who propagated this more were the separatist fighters, because this was not done as a matter of a mistaken thing. It was well-cooked, well-prepared to disinform and misinform people.
Kalof says combating disinformation is more difficult due to limited funding, security risk, and restricted access to information.
I have gone to the regional delegation of transport to ask for statistics of registered cars in the southwest, particularly in Buya. And I was told to go and stand on the road to start counting the cars myself.
Journalism experts are urging fact-checkers to keep fighting disinformation and practicing responsible reporting.
You have to keep pushing for laws that will guarantee for access to information. In Cameroon, the Constitution provides for that, but we do not yet have Access to Information Acts.
And just like elsewhere around the world, journalists here say social media is the primary source of disinformation in Cameroon. Njozeka Danhatu, VOA News, Buya, Cameroon.
Amid violence in Mexico and uncertainty over President-elect Donald Trump's immigration policies, some migrants say they are considering returning to the countries they've fled. Reuters' Jillian Kitchener has this report.
As Donald Trump's incoming administration plans strict measures for the U.S. southern border, migrants waiting in Mexico for appointments to seek asylum face a difficult decision. Do they press ahead with diminished odds of entering the United States after Trump takes office? Or do they go back to a place they were so desperate to leave? The answer is not an easy one. Juledi Moreno, who traveled to Mexico from Venezuela, recently told Reuters it may not be worth waiting in Mexico for a chance at life in the U.S.
I cry every day. I want to go back to my country. I don't want to stay here anymore. I suffer a lot. Men treat us badly and it's hard. They sometimes mistreat us. Sometimes people die. There is a lot of sexual abuse. Women are mistreated because they don't have money. It's horrible. This is horrible.
Violence in Mexico weighs heavily on any decision. Organized crime has established extensive human trafficking networks across Mexico, making the journey north through the country that much more treacherous. Jorgelis Maldonado has also traveled from Venezuela.
It's very dangerous. Many things have happened. There's women and a lot of children who are suffering.
A Venezuelan official said between 50 and 100 compatriots request what is called voluntary return each week from Mexico, either covering costs themselves or with state assistance. This man said, "This is too much. We have wounds on our feet," and added that he longs for his home country. Sources told Reuters Trump is expected to take a slew of executive actions on his first day in office, which would give federal immigration officers more latitude to arrest people with no criminal records and surge troops to the U.S.-Mexico border. While the uncertainty of what's to come after January 20th has discouraged some, this northbound migrant caravan is speeding up ahead of Trump's inauguration. "God is good," one migrant told Reuters, adding, quote, "If it is his will, then we will get there and pass through, as they say, the big door."
Now let's take a short break. Please stay tuned. We will be right back.
In times of change, when the world seems uncertain, and what we hear doesn't reflect what we see, we seek the truth. When we are told only part of the story, we lose trust. In moments of crisis, our dreams, hopes, and wishes for a better tomorrow depend on a free press. At Voice of America, we bring you the stories that people take risks to see. We connect the world and unite it with truth. At Voice of America, we show you the whole picture.
For those that have just joined us, please note that we are streaming live on our Facebook pages, VOA Shona, VOA Studio 7, and VOA Ndebele. We are also live on YouTube, VOA Zimbabwe. Zimbabweans joined today the rest of the world in commemorating International Migrants Day. Zimbabweans are grappled with issues relating to xenophobia and regularizing their stay in neighboring countries and abroad. On December 18, 1990, the United Nations General Assembly adopted a resolution on the International Convention on the Protection of the Rights of All Migrant Workers and Members of Their Families. IOM Director General Amy Pope said they are committed to working closely with Zimbabwe to manage migration in a way that is humane, sustainable, and inclusive during her work visit to Zimbabwe recently. And now to discuss this, we are joined by a legal expert, a human rights defender based here in the U.S. in Texas, Mr. Kennedy Macier, with the All Hands on Justice organization. Mr. Macier, welcome to Live Talk.
Oh, thank you very much.
Awesome, man. Now, today is making waves across the whole world. What is the importance of this day on a global scale? Let's start from there.
Yes, today is to commemorate immigration and migration, which is recognized under the United Nations, that migration is a human rights issue. And because of many things that are happening in different countries, strife, climate change, political upheavals in many countries, migration is an important subject that needs to be talked about by world leaders and everyone concerned.
Aha. Uh-huh. Now, in as much as the world is engrossed and heavily invested in these migration issues, what is the status of migration? Let's base from Zimbabwe and let's look at how many Zimbabweans have traveled across the world who now live over there. I know we have over 3 million people in just South Africa and many others in different parts of the world. Do you see migration playing an integral part in the day-to-day lives of Zimbabweans today?
Yes, migration indeed plays a very integral part in the lives of Zimbabweans, as you said. And as you know, the diaspora, so to say, which are the migrants in other countries, also play a huge role in the GDP, in the money that they actually bring back to Zimbabwe. And talking about that, the issues that actually force the Zimbabweans to actually engage in these migrations are pretty much issues regarding governance. And of course, people should migrate. That's the nature of human beings. But the reasons of migrating as well are the reasons that need to be looked at. Many Zimbabweans have gone into different countries, South Africa, be it the United States, the UK, wherever they are, because of economic issues that are affecting the country. Some are economic refugees in different countries. Some are political refugees in various countries. And of course, those reasons, being the reasons why Zimbabweans are migrating, should be addressed. Even though immigration is a fundamental right, it's a right. The issues that are pushing people to migrate, especially from Zimbabwe, need to be addressed. And if those are addressed, I think some of the issues that bedevil migrants in those different countries might be also be looked into.
Mm-hmm. Now, we are going to bring another legal expert from South Africa. I'm just getting a notification now. We will have Mr. Velempini Ndlovu joining us in a little bit to tell us a little bit more about the situation in South Africa, where there is a lot of Zimbabweans applying their trade and leaving them. But Mr. Masie, the challenges that migrants face across the globe, not just Zimbabweans only, what are the challenges besides? I know there's culture issues, there's language issues, but on a broader scale, what are the biggest issues that the world needs to address in these migrant issues?
Yeah, the biggest issues, I think, for migrants is the separation. The family unit is being, disseminated. Migrating, in as much as it is attractive somehow for better opportunities, a lot of families are tearing apart. People migrate, say the father migrates or the mother migrates into a different country. And sometimes it takes a very long time for them to reunite after that migration, probably moving, to where probably the parent or the breadwinner is. So I think the biggest issue for me is the separation. The family units that we know as Africans are being, taken apart. And that is not good for the generation or for the young ones that are growing, because some of them are growing without both parents because the other parent is looking for opportunities elsewhere.
Mm-hmm. We will come back to you, Mr. Masie. We are now joined by another legal mind, an immigration lawyer and defender in his own rights based in South Africa, Mr. Velempini Ndlovu. Yebo Ndlovu, unjani? Hi, Tinasi, right. Agos Chele, Baba, what is the status of migration in South Africa? You know, today the whole world over is commemorating International Migration Day, but Zimbabweans in South Africa make a lot of noise. We hear a lot of things. What's the general status of things there?
The things here are tough for immigrants in South Africa nowadays. Because what's happened is the economy of South Africa is also not doing that well. So it's not doing as well as it used to. So now there's a competition for jobs and other business opportunities. That's why even currently, as we speak, they are saying that every spaza shop, that is every spaza shop in South Africa, should be registered. So they are in the process of registering. The trade deadline was this Tuesday, that's passed, but they've extended it to February to say everyone is supposed to be registered, because they've seen that many people from Pakistan, India, and Ethiopia are the ones that are running the spaza shops. So South Africans are now clamoring for those opportunities. And Zimbabweans, there are many Zimbabweans who migrated to South Africa, especially during the economic meltdown in Zimbabwe from 2007 to around 2008. And there are many who are still coming. And those ones are people who are actually fighting for what is called manual jobs, jobs that no one wants to do. But now, because of the tough economic conditions in South Africa, South Africans are now beginning to look at jobs that they did not previously look at, like people who work in gardens, people who work in restaurants, and people who are maids and the like. Mm-hmm. So it's not really a good time for an immigrant in South Africa, given the fact that it's also not that easy for them to get documentation, because to get a permit in South Africa is very hard. It's only people who've got critical skills who can easily get a permit. Otherwise, a general work permit is not something that is easy to come by.
Mm-hmm. Now, while we are still in South Africa, Mr. Ndlovu, we've had issues of xenophobia attacks. We have heard about language barriers. South Africa has a whole bunch of languages they speak. The culture shock and all that. How is this affecting the migrants in South Africa?
Yeah, it affects them negatively, because xenophobic attacks are sporadic and they do happen in a manner that's shocking. I myself and my family actually lost a cousin. I lost a cousin of mine, Elvis Nyati. I'm sure you heard that story. He was banned by people who suspected him of being a criminal, but he had never committed any crime in his life. So xenophobic attacks are very serious, in that they result in people being killed for no reason whatsoever, other than the fact that they are foreigners, is what happened to my cousin, Elvis Nyati, and many other people who fell victim. There were about 62 people who were killed during the xenophobic attacks of 2008, if I recall correctly. And then there were others who were killed also in other xenophobic attacks that happened. And immigrants stay under constant threat of being attacked, especially when you talk about language barrier. One of the things that they were doing when they were attacking people during xenophobic attacks was to speak to them in a local dialect and ask them things like, what is an elbow in isiZulu? And if you didn't know what an elbow is in isiZulu, you would get injured or you would get killed. And that actually affected even other South Africans who don't speak isiZulu, because there are other South Africans who speak languages like Venda, Tsonga, who might not know isiZulu. So immigrants in South Africa actually face a very serious threat to their lives, and they are not exactly protected by the police, because the crime in South Africa is actually very high, to such an extent that even the locals are heavily affected by crime. So it's not easy for police officers to concentrate on protecting immigrants when they are begging to even protect locals.
I see. That's a lot there going on, Mr. Ndlovu, in South Africa. Let me cross over to Mr. Masie here in the U.S. Mr. Masie, in 1980, December 18, the United Nations General Assembly passed a resolution on the International Convention on the Protection of Rights for All Migrant Workers and Members of Their Families. What does this resolution speak on?
Yes, this resolution basically speaks on probably the right to work and sustain themselves, like the immigrants, while it's in the foreign countries. So basically, it gives immigrants the same rights as loosely said, the locals, if they are allowed to migrate in those various in those countries. So. Pretty much, we have seen that happening in countries like the United States, where if someone migrates, they are given the opportunity to work and sustain themselves. They are given work authorizations and they are regularized. That is if they are regularized. But I've seen that in different countries, as my brother said here in South Africa, that they still face issues where people are being targeted for working, like if you are, from, various countries, if you do have a spaz in South Africa, that can be seen as, taking jobs for locals. That in itself is not, in the Latin spirit of that resolution. Immigrants have got the right to work in the countries where they reside, and they should not be targeted for that using any other forms, xenophobia or otherwise.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Ndlovu, let me come back to you as we wrap up for the day. Do you feel the migrant rights are observed based on your experience in South Africa and what you've heard also from other places across the globe?
In South Africa, migrant rights are not protected because there's this sentiment that's rising, that's even pushed by prominent political parties, like we saw the Patriotic Alliance of Gayton McKenzie campaigning earlier this year in South Africa at their national elections, whereby the slogan "Mabahambe," which means they should all go, was prominent, and that party actually got about 6% of the vote. And that actually shows that the far right wing parties that campaign on issues like scapegoating migrants for things that are happening in the economy, where we all know that migrants are actually in the sidelines of the economy. They're not in the center. They don't control the economy, but they're blamed for everything. Like, unemployment is blamed on migrants, crime is blamed on migrants, even though the statistics that show people who are in prison show that the majority of the people who are in prison are actually South Africans. More than 92% of the people that are in prison are local South Africans. So it can't be true that migrants are actually the ones driving the crime rate to the levels that the crime rate is in South Africa. So I don't feel like talking to people around and talking to migrants and seeing the sentiments, because what has happened is even the ANC has actually lost support, but they actually have now turned against migrants. They are now saying that maybe the absence of supporting migrants, because the ANC used to fight from neighboring countries when it was fighting apartheid.
Uh-huh. So now, wow.
And they're now saying
Mr. Ndlovu.
Yes.
We will have to end it here, unfortunately, today. Time is not on our side. Let me thank you again, both of you gentlemen, for this quite insightful nuggets we've shared today. That was Kennedy Masie from All Hands on Justice here in Texas in the U.S. and Mr. Velempini Ndlovu, another legal mind in South Africa. This brings us to the end of our show today, and thanks again to our listeners and viewers. I am signing out in Washington. This is Evans Zininga.